This is KCRW live from the Multicultural Center at UC Santa Barbara. I'm Jonathan Bastian. And in collaboration with the Lois and Walter Capps Center for Creative Democracy, we want to welcome our live audience and our radio listeners to A Campus Divided, a conversation about political polarization on today's colleges and universities. Well, tonight we're doing something a little different. We're stepping away from the daily political buzz and asking today's college students, the newest generation of American voters, to reflect on where this country is heading. The election in November exposed a deep political disconnect in America. And one place that disconnect has been felt most is on college campuses around the country. Protests, of course, are not new to college life, but violent, politically charged outbursts have erupted in the last few months on campuses such as UC Berkeley, UC Davis, Middlebury College at alarming rates. On UC campuses alone, troubles have stemmed from conservative speakers canceling speeches due to students and also administrative protests. This raises questions of free speech versus hate speech and what role universities play in promoting a diversity of political ideas. Tonight, we'll hear from four very different students with diverse backgrounds and beliefs. We'll ask them to help us understand if today's students are as divided as the country itself and what all this means for the country moving forward. Let's welcome those students to the stage now. Andrew Gates is an economics and philosophy major from Sacramento. He's the president of the UC Santa Barbara College Republicans and advocates for free speech on campus. Hey, Andrew.
How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Cole Martin, a political science major from San Diego and current off-campus senator. He also volunteered for the congressional campaign of Republican Justin Fried. Hey, Cole.
Thanks for having me.
And Samantha Sanchez, a music major from the Inland Empire. She's part of the Black Student Union and works to protect minority and marginalized students. Thanks for being with us, Samantha.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you. And finally, Oscar Zarate, political science major from Compton, who leads a resource and support group for undocumented students. All right, let's have a conversation tonight. And we want to begin hearing from you guys to get a sense of who you are and how you became as politically active as you are. I want to start with Oscar Zarate here. I mean, your story is quite incredible. You grew up in Compton, but moved here from Mexico at age five and have told folks that you're undocumented here, which is courageous, of course, to be on this stage. But tell us a little bit about that background and again, how it's led you to where we are now.
Of course. So, like you said, I was born in Mexico in Acapulco, Guerrero. It's a coastal town in Mexico. Really runs on tourism. My grandfather owns a little small tourist business there. And before I was born, my dad actually came to the United States to, you know, forge that better future that he wanted for us and his family. And growing up, like, I didn't really know my dad. I kind of only known him through pictures, right? And when I came here, funny enough, like when I finally met the man, when I was five, I turned to my mom and I was like, who is this guy? Like, I could not believe this person because he looked so different from the pictures that I saw. And growing up in Compton, it was a very, very wild experience that has taught me many different values and has definitely shaped the perspective that I have now in terms of seeing different societal issues. It's definitely informed the way I think and has made me the person I am today. I feel like I wouldn't have gotten here to UCSB if I hadn't been raised in Compton and grew up in Compton and learned everything I did from there.
All right, well, we're going to learn more throughout this conversation. Let's move across the aisle here to Cole Martin. A little bit about yourself as well. Again, you've been here, this is your fifth year, and when I met you, you called yourself a California Republican, I remember. So tell us again about you and how that term kind of fits who you are.
So me and my father coined this term together on a car ride. My dad's a businessman. I grew up in San Diego, California, a really nice neighborhood down there. And what it means to be a California Republican is really a new era of young Republicans that have a strong classic view of conservative economics. Small government, yet socially we are all about achieving the American dream. And that's everything that I've grown up knowing, grown up being taught. And my background, loving politics, loving conversation, debate back and forth, that's what this is about. And just achieving the American dream through that aspect of things really is the most important thing for me, and especially being one of the few California Republicans here.
All right. Samantha Sanchez, so to go to you here, I heard you weren't actually very politically active at UC Santa Barbara until you heard a right-wing speaker come onto campus, Ben Shapiro, something we'll discuss later. But an interesting, also a music major, which is interesting. So again, a little bit about you as well and your political background.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I just wanted to acknowledge the fact that not only am I the only woman on this panel, but I'm the only black person on this panel. So just a clap for black people and black girl magic, first and foremost. So a lot of people are probably wondering, what is a music major doing on this stage, on a political stage? For me, where it all began, I was active in high school. I was in my BSU in high school, and I was very politically active. When I came to college, I said I wasn't going to do it. I told myself, Sam, you're not going to be politically active. You're going to focus on music, and that is what it's going to be. But when I came to college and heard that Ben Shapiro was coming on campus, my first thought, because of the way it was presented to black students, the title of his speech, what we heard, this is what was presented to us, was that it was called Prejudice, Lies, and a Divided People, The Legacy of Black Lives. And so for me, I was thinking in my head, this is a direct target against black people. And that's not something that I'm okay with, right? So initially, I thought that the university would handle this. And I thought that the university would never allow something like this to happen. Much to my surprise, that was not the case. So that is when I took matters into my own hands and I started working towards trying to protect our marginalized and minority students on campus, because I don't feel that that's something that we have enough of on campus.
Yeah. And finally, Andrew Gates, second year president of the College Republicans. And of course, you've taken on a big role as the president 2 years in a row of the College Republicans. Many people think of these UCs as very liberal. What's compelled you to take on this position? What in your background has brought you to where you are?
Yeah, so I was born in Sacramento, you know, the capital of California. So there's a lot of politics going on there. I wasn't that interested in politics as I am now in high school. However, I've always been interested in debate. I've always been interested in like philosophical questions. And so when I was coming to college, you know, I didn't even know if I was going to stick with the major that I had. But I did know that the one thing that I definitely wanted to get out of college was some sort of environment that was conducive to pursuing truth. And I was always in high school open to differing ideas. I was always, you know, open to people who disagreed with me, even if they disagreed with me vehemently. I would never think of them as, you know, evil or immoral people, and I expected the same, and I got the same. But when I went to college, I noticed that the environment was, you know, very different. I noticed that, you know, a lot of people were so used to some sort of echo chamber wherein their opinions were shielded from criticism, and they were basically, you know, told some sort of dogma, some sort of like prescript of academia, and they were not exposed to differing ideas. And so when I came here, I wanted to change that, and I wanted to engage in dialogue, engage in discourse. And, you know, I come from a family, you know, like my grandmother immigrated here from Mexico. My mother, you know, when she first had me, she was, we were living in a very impoverished community. My father was involved in gang activity, and he actually died because of that. And when I see the story of my grandmother and of my mother and of their success in America, and them actualizing the potential that is the American dream, it makes me very sick and very it unsettles me to see that a lot of people on college campuses don't share this sentiment about America. So,
thank you, Andrew. Well, Andrew and a few of you have been on campus perhaps longer than others, especially with Oscar as well. And when I was here on campus, I could feel the tension between the different groups here. And it was just palpable. And what I wonder about is that how it felt 4 years ago here? Let's start with you, Oscar. I mean, what was it like back then?
Wow. All right. Gotta go to memory lane. Okay. 4 years ago, I feel like I wasn't very politically active. I feel like I was really focusing on my academics, since I was coming into a UC and coming from Compton. Everyone told me it was going to be really hard. So I was like, I got to stake to my academics. So I have very limited experience to, or I can say personally, about how the climate was back then. But to me, it wasn't as, I would say, toxic as it is now. I feel like people were more open to discourse and engaging in dialogue about difficult issues that were at that time, especially as an undocumented immigrant. Like, talking about immigration was especially hard back then. And it was something that we were vehemently always fighting towards progressive policies in California. And I feel that kind of like inclined me into engaging in that type of dialogue. And I also am very unsettled because in those spaces that I used to be in 4 years ago, I see this toxic climate that has kind of overcome it and has really stifled any type of discourse, even within our own group.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cole, what do you think about this? 3-4 years ago, were you able to have conversations with other folks back then, or what?
Absolutely. I mean, it's come to a point where people are seeing each other. Out of my own experience, I was at a party here in Isla Vista, and someone came up to me and they said, "Oh, you voted for Trump?" And I said, "Yeah, I did." And they said, "Oh, we can't talk. We can't have a conversation at a party, not a political scene." Not a debate, not anything like that. They are starting to single you out for your individual beliefs over something, over a situation that has nothing to do with that. So it's come to a point where students are being silenced on this campus. Students are not being able to speak their opinion, and they're being completely treated differently based off simply who they voted for. And so 4 years ago, that was not the case. You could have a conversation. You could talk to your friends. You could really debate one another. You could ask them questions. People were genuinely interested in different political ideas. But I don't see that as a solution anymore on this campus.
Andrew, would you say that's about right, what Cole's saying or what Oscar's saying?
No, yeah, definitely. I think a large majority of people you know, on campuses, on college campuses, sort of have these preconceived notions of the people on the opposite side of the political spectrum. And a lot of people approach conversations thinking, you know, this person's ideology reflects upon their character. Mm-hmm. And rather than thinking these people have come to, you know, they have sorted through a series of arguments and have deduced their belief, and they might have deduced it irrationally, right? It might be an invalid deduction, and I might disagree with them wholeheartedly. But what we should think of people who disagree with us is not, you know, you're a violent fascist who's out to get me or to attack me. We should think that, like, you know, were I the same person with the same biological and psychological makeup, with the same, you know, environment and the same background, exposed to the same stimulus, I would probably believe what they believed as well. Mm-hmm. Not definitely, but probably. Yeah. And so, you know, when you start, you know, approaching people with that mindset, you realize, you know, they're, you know, it's an environment that's more conducive right to discussion.
Well, Samantha, I want to bring you in here. So, I mean, what we're kind of talking about, the elephant in the room here, is Trump's election is what changed things. So how did you feel that shape the political climate here at UC Santa Barbara?
Right. For me, it's not just at UC Santa Barbara. I think in America, we've seen people become more bold, and that's on both ends, right? Because we see the protests that are happening on both sides. That's not just one side versus another. We've seen people be unafraid to express their political views. So for me, that's what this administration has done. That's what it has done. That's what this election has done. It's allowed people to express their views one way or another. Without fear of who's gonna say something back to them, because you know that there's people behind you, whether it's one side or another. There's always gonna be a side that you're on.
And I mean, that's a great point, that people feel like things are more extreme on the left and in the right. So I actually want to get your take on this here, basically. But let's say Oscar, for example, would you say that liberals, college Democrats, have also moved their positions to the left, especially, or do they kind of hold the similar ground?
Democrats. Okay. Well, I think definitely here at UCSB, the college Democrats have definitely, I think, gotten a little bit more radical over the time. And I think a new leadership is coming into that group that, you know, is really more progressive and more active in how they really advocate for the things they believe in, and really trying to push this political dialogue in a way that it's more proactive and engaging with different ideas.
Well, how about on the right here? I mean, Andrew, so one of the things about the rise of Trump is that some fringe groups have been associated with him, whether they're white supremacists or other far-right groups. And you and I have talked a little bit about that. Sometimes there have been some folks that have just kind of been lumped into the college Republicans and maybe their views that are extremely far-right. Have you noticed that happening, or what's that been like as the leader of the college Republicans?
Well, first and foremost, one of the main purposes of the college Republicans is to foster some sort of climate that's conducive to dialogue. And I've said that a lot because that is one of the main purposes and one of the main things that drives me and my club. And so when you have this space where people can advocate for what they believe in, and who people are free to express an opinion, and that opinion, you know, it can be criticized, but you will never be deemed, you know, hateful or violent for it. You do have some individuals who, you know, have extreme beliefs coming into these organizations, but it does not describe the majority. And I feel like, you know, a lot of the attacks against the right, a lot of the attacks against the college Republicans in particular, strawmans and, you know, ad hominems saying, you know, you are all fascists, white nationalists, white supremacists, mm-hmm. right? And believe it or not, people who actually believe that aren't as small as you might think they are of the population on campus. But when you actually get to sit down and talk to the members of my club, as I have for the past 2.5 years, you realize that they're human beings who have a love and respect for their fellow students like no other. Like, I've talked to all of these people, I've gotten to know them, I've gotten to befriend them, and I know for a fact that if you came to them and you were even as radical a leftist as like a Marxist or a communist, anarcho-communist, totalitarian communist, whatever, and you came to them and you said, hey, I want to discuss capitalism, or I want to discuss, you know, social issues, Black Lives Matter, or the Ben Shapiro figure mm-hmm. that you brought to campus, they would be 100% down to have that conversation. And they would even, you know, if things played out right and, you know, the jive was there, they would become friends with them. And we've seen this on campus repeatedly.
Well, let me ask that to Samantha Sanchez, because one thing you have said before is that you feel that college Republicans try to provoke you
right.
a little bit.
Right. Absolutely. I think there's a lot of events that have happened, a lot of arguments that have taken place between marginalized students and the college Republicans. And I think that a lot of the events that they have had have been based in hate. So for me, you have to think about whether or not, what's the intention, you know, and the impact of that intention.
So you have Ben Shapiro, for example, who's a right-wing speaker. Anything else that comes to mind, though, that you could point to?
Right, like Milo Yiannopoulos, David Horowitz, like these are all people, not only just the college Republicans have brought on campus, though it's also the Young Americans for Liberty, one of those groups, something like that on campus. But conservative groups that are bringing speakers on campus that are speaking on experiences that they do not have themselves. And I think that's an important point, because when you have that experience, you can speak to how this world affects you within that experience. When you don't have that experience, you can't speak on that. So for me, and for many other marginalized students on campus, it's more so feeling like someone is questioning our dignities, not giving us the respect that we deserve as human beings, as people. And that's where I start to draw the line, because I don't feel that it's okay that we should have to question our own dignity or have other people's question our dignity or respect for our lives.
Oscar Zarate, you're...
Yeah, I mean, I want to echo some of what Sam is saying, in that, you know, Trump's election did change the political arena a little bit, in that, you know, now these issues are very, very attuned to kind of the humanity and personhood that some of us share. Like, I mean, when I talk about immigration, like, the conversation has now changed because of Trump's policies, you feel me? Like, now I'm talking about, like, whether I can stay in this country or not, which is not a discussion that we were having 4 years ago, at least to the extreme that it is now. So I definitely feel what Sam is saying, that these discussions drive more to, like, someone's personhood and undermining that humanity that we all share as human beings.
Cole Martin, the California Republican here, do you feel that that's the case, that these some of these events held by folks on the Republican side have been hateful in some sense or not?
No, most definitely not. These events are put on to foster a community, a conversation. And if those individuals cannot partake in a simple conversation because they feel it's hateful towards who they are as a person or who they identify with, it's simply not the case. I'd like to take it back to a point where Samantha made, where she said, if you're not a part of that community, you can't talk about it. If we can't, you can't speak on it. If you cannot speak on a topic simply based on the fact that you're not a part of the individual community, then that's not conducive to a university environment. That's not conducive to having a conversation, and that's not conducive to promoting a strong community here at UC Santa Barbara.
Samantha, do you want to respond?
Yeah, I just want to correct that. I said that you cannot speak on the experience. If you want to have a dialogue and discuss what that experience is like, and from your perspective, what that looks like, then absolutely, I love to have conversations and dialogues about things like this. But as far as speaking on it and on an experience, as far as Ben Shapiro goes and saying that Black Lives Matter is based on prejudiced lives and a divided people, I think speaking on that experience and not having a dialogue about that is the issue.
Andrew Gates, the head of the Republicans.
Yeah, I'd like to. I find it interesting that we're talking about standpoint theory, and I'd like to address a point here. Standpoint theory is basically, you know, what's been hashed out right here, where it's, you know, if you are not a part of a community, you cannot speak on the experiences of that community. I believe that's false, and I believe that people on the left actually do largely believe this to be false when they speak about the experiences of white men or Republicans or conservatives, right? And so the idea that you can't speak on issues that don't directly affect you is ridiculous. You know, women who aren't drafted still have an opinion on the draft, and they have every right to have an opinion on the draft, because having an opinion on the draft, you don't need some sort of experience to have that opinion. Having experiences definitely helps. I don't think anybody on the right, except, you know, the more extreme types who kind of like cover their ears and don't want to listen to anybody, genuinely believes that your experiences don't contribute to how you view the world. So, yes, I'm not an undocumented student, and Oscar, as an undocumented student, has experiences that I don't have. But that doesn't mean that I can't discuss the issues of illegal immigration just because I am not affected by it. And so I think that when we get to these you know, views that like of, you know, of standpoint theory, that we cannot talk about issues that don't directly affect us, you would basically have the entire country can only speak on like 25% of the issues that they actually talk about on Facebook and wherever. And I will like to point out that I wanted to address, you know, earlier, there was, you know, an issue wherein one of the senators, the student senators, like recorded the name of our Ben Shapiro event incorrectly. And that did, you know, rightly make a lot of people upset, because the legacy of Black Lives is an attack on Black people. The legacy of Black Lives Matter is not. And Black Lives Matter is a political organization. So I would like to clarify that.
If you're just joining us, this is KCRW. I'm Jonathan Bastian. We're live at the Multicultural Center at UC Santa Barbara discussing political polarization on college campuses with a diversity of students. And they're joining us up here on live, joining us up on here at the stage tonight. And we've been talking a little bit about this issue of a right-wing speaker, Ben Shapiro, being on campus. But there have been other big issues at UC campuses as well. Ann Coulter recently had to cancel at UC Berkeley. Milo Yiannopoulos, another outspoken figure on the right, also had to cancel, they say, because of scheduling here at Santa Barbara. But this is happening across the UCs right now. And again, raising questions of free speech versus hate speech. So I want to get a sense from some of us up here. Let's start with you, Oscar Zarate. Do you think in these cases that I've just mentioned that, in fact, that these speakers should be canceling, that they should not be allowed on campuses to express their opinions?
I think I would like to start with saying that I do see the importance of free speech. I definitely believe in free speech and its necessity to keep well-rounded democracy and in discourse in our populace. I do see legitimately how someone can look at Ann Coulter or Milo Yiannopoulos and see hate speech in there. And I feel like hate speech, for me, is more of something that can be handled societally. It's not something that we can, I personally believe, it's not something that we could find solutions through legislation, but through society treating these ideas in a free market, in that, you know, bad ideas are expounded and good ideas are uplifted. For example, if someone expresses the idea that Elvis Presley is alive, you know, and they pronounce this ideal in a first date or at a college classroom or somewhere in public, they will immediately suffer a societal consequence in terms of laughter and judgment on that person for believing that thing. And I think that's how I would perceive how to handle ideas that, you know, are sometimes beyond the bounds of reason in terms of a discourse.
So you would say let them on campus, but let the students decide if they're going to show up or not? Or
exactly. And also, like, AS is not, like, AS is an institution that can decide
that's
not...
associated students.
Yeah, that can decide not to fund something if they doesn't go along with their ideals or tenets as an establishment. And that's how they could maybe pronounce that they don't support that. I mean, not... giving money to Ben Shapiro isn't denying someone free speech. They're just not supporting that particular idea that Ben Shapiro represents.
Well, Cole Martin, you're a part of this Associated Students group, so you would make a decision whether or not to fund a speaker like Milo Yiannopoulos or Ann Coulter or Ben Shapiro. What's that like for you to have to be to make that type of a decision?
It's actually very simple. We have a legal document. It's called the Legal Code of Associated Students. And what it says is that we cannot base our funding off of the substance itself of the speech, of the idea, of the program, whatever it is. It has to be completely nonpartisan. So when we fund something, it's enabling a student group to do whatever they please. It's not enabling a right-wing speaker. It's not enabling a left-wing speaker. We don't look at it through that frame. We look at it through a nonpartisan point of view.
Well, Samantha Sanchez, okay, that's how to make the decision. We've heard from Oscar as well. How do you feel about Ben Shapiro or Milo Yiannopoulos? I mean, in this issue of free speech versus hate speech?
Right. To me, it's not really a conversation of whether or not we should have these speakers on campus. To me, because if we're looking at free speech, there's a lot of people who believe that any speech is free speech, right? If I were to say that I was going to bomb the school or I was going to kill somebody, that's not free speech, right? So there's a line somewhere. At some point, we draw a line. So to me, it's where are we drawing that line and for what reason? If we're talking about protecting people's lives, then where is that line drawn on college campuses? Because I think the response that we see from marginalized students on campus when these speakers come is pretty sad. It really truly is. I mean, talk to our psychologists on campus. They'll tell you how many students come into their office after things like this happen. So psychologically, are we protecting our students? No. So how do we do that better? And where do we draw that line in order to do that better?
So in this case, I mean, yes or no, do you think they should be on or not?
That is a hard question to answer. For me, I have to say I cannot answer that question, but what I will say is we need to do a better job of drawing that line and saying, where will we protect these students that are already marginalized and unheard on college campuses?
So Andrew Gates, I'm going to let you respond here as the head of the College Republicans and had a hand in probably inviting some of these speakers to college campuses. You've heard the feelings of some of the folks that maybe feel marginalized or feel like this is hurting the campus and people. So how do you respond to that?
Well, obviously we disagree, and I don't believe that Ben Shapiro is a hateful person. However, just because an opinion is hateful does not mean that you don't have the right to say it. And I would also like to say that there is a distinction within free speech. There is, you know, some sort of codified doctrine wherein you can say some things but not others. And that doctrine is, if you threaten somebody, if you commit libel or slander, that is not covered under free speech. If you incite panic by saying, you know, there's a fire in this theater right now, that is not covered under free speech, because your words are directly affecting somebody's rights, not their emotions, their rights. And so you do not have a right not to be offended. So if I say something that is hateful, that you deem hateful, because hateful is entirely subjective, I still have the right to say it. If I threaten you and say, I'm going to, you know, bomb UCSB, like you mentioned, that is not covered under free speech. Somebody can take preemptive defensive action. So, and I would also like to say, in regards to Associated Students, Oscar made the point that, like, you know, Associated Students can give funds or reject funds based upon their own set of principles and whatever. As Cole explicitly stated, that's not the case. They have to follow the Associated Constitution. But also, because the money that Associated Students get is at a public university funded by the taxpayers, the public university itself and any organization that operates within its confines are bound by the First Amendment. So,
I want to bring up an example on UC Santa Barbara that we heard about. It was a case that was hotly debated at UC Santa Barbara, led by a gentleman who runs the libertarian group on campus, held a sign up that said, "Even Nazis deserve free speech." And something that I'm sure you guys have some thoughts on, Oscar, I see a smile on your face, Oscar Zarate here. I mean, how did you react to that?
I don't even know what to say. Some of these things leave me speechless, to be honest. Do Nazis deserve free speech? I don't know. Sam, I think I'm
Samantha Sanchez, we'll turn it over to you here.
I mean, really, all I have to say about that is they had free speech, and we see where that went. So that's
okay.
Pretty it.
Cole Martin, as an advocate of free speech, I mean, is there a point in which we go too far on these campuses, or would you back that kind of sentiment?
No, they absolutely have free speech, and the whole point is that we're in a capitalist society. So let's take that point of view on it. Let's open up the marketplace of free ideas. Let's let these people speak, and if people do not support them, if people do not like what they're saying, they're naturally going to get silenced by their peers. So why should we, as individuals, as leaders on this campus, silence them in the first place? That's not healthy. That's not right. Let's open up the free marketplace of ideas on this campus.
Oscar, did you want to respond? Oscar Zarate?
But if they're silenced by us, we are their peers. We're doing exactly what you're describing. So I'm confused.
Yeah, to clarify, what I mean is that we can't take our leadership positions and not fund an organization. We can't go up to someone and punch them in the face if they're a Nazi because we disagree with them. Let them speak. Let them say their opinion so that they silence themselves. If they hold such an unpopular opinion, there's no reason for us to do it. Let them silence themselves.
Andrew Green, or Andrew Gates, rather, how did you feel about that incident? Even Nazis deserve free speech was the sign that was being
Nazis called. Absolutely do deserve free speech. And I would like to say that, you know, we can have this discussion, and I'll make a point about it in a second, about whether Nazis deserve free speech. But if you've actually examined the political climate and culture in the United States, the problem is that a lot of the people that leftists or, you know, like people on the left are targeting aren't actual Nazis. Like, they will go up to somebody who's brown-skinned, who happens to believe in capitalism and identifies as a libertarian, and they will call them a fascist, they will call them a Nazi. So yes, that's why you see on Facebook the one video posted 1,000 times of Richard Spencer being punched, because they can literally only find like 0.2% of people who are actually Nazis. Where are the Nazis? And I would like, you know, also like to say that Nazis do deserve free speech. And the problem with Nazis in Nazi Germany wasn't that they were going around, you know, to political debates and saying, you know, oh, I believe this or I believe that. They had governmental institutional power. And I believe if a Nazi has institutional power, then it is perfectly righteous, it is perfectly moral, it is perfectly just to depose them of their seat or to act against them. And the reason is because they are enacting their policies. And so, you know, I would say that, like, you know, if anything, if you're taking the utilitarian approach, right, Nazis had free speech and look what happened. That's very utilitarian. It's saying that Nazis had free speech and this was the objective outcome of that. Well, if anything, if you want to stifle the Nazis, then you wouldn't treat them, you know, like leftists treat conservatives do today, where, you know, you can't voice your opinion, because what that does is turns the public against you, okay. Right? The Nazis gained public support, not because of their ideas, but because how they were defending people against the communists. They weren't good people, right?
Anybody want to respond to that? We'll move on here. Another question that has come up is, when I walked around this campus, a lot of people kept using the word Antifa or anti-fascist, and there was a feeling on this campus that there was this fear, that there was a sense of fascism going on these UC campuses, which kind of shocked me, having not spent much time on them. Samantha Sanchez, is that something that you've heard or you've been worried about?
My fear, just in general, isn't of any political ideology in general, or specifically, I mean. To me, it's just a lack of protection for the dignities and respect of human beings. And that's really all that it is to me. I think that we should be respecting people's choices, who they are as people innately. I think that we should be fostering safe dialogues and safe spaces for people to feel like they can voice these opinions. And on both sides, I'm not one to say that I only believe that liberals should speak or that conservatives should speak. I think that it should be on both ends because, like I believe Andrew was saying earlier, when you actually sit down and have a dialogue, you see that you guys are your people. All of us are people. And if you actually have that conversation, like you bring it back down to the human level. Like we're all human. We're all wanting to be happy in a safe environment. And that's the key for me, is a safe environment for all people to feel like they can be who they are.
Oscar Zarate from Compton, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like those conceptions of like people calling people Nazis, even though they might not be, kind of leads right to this kind of faux polarization where these groups live in echo chambers and they kind of foster these animosity towards other people that they haven't even met. I know for sure that for me, the first 2 years being here at UCSB, I definitely felt like I was indoctrinated to hate people who I've never even met, who has never even spoken to me. And one particular event was like the when Customs and Border Protection came to UCSB and me and my group protested their being here at the career fair. And that's where I actually met my first college Republican, because they came over there and tried to instigate a conflict with us. And I came, and there's actually a picture of me talking to one of them in a Trump hat. And I feel that's where I think I started to challenge myself about challenging myself and talking to people who do have that diverse ideology for me. And I think by doing that, I found that those people are actually human beings who have an idea because of their particular background, and that animosity that I felt before was almost ill-founded. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, it was something that was fabricated. And I feel that led me to have discussions and dialogues that really expanded my own.
Well, I think you hit on something key here, which is you showed up to a college campus and you were kind of instructed to feel a certain way mm-hmm. already. And it seems like those tensions have been heightened. So the people now you know, disrespect or don't know, their positions seem to be even more extreme. So I'm wondering, and I'd love to get an answer from you guys, is why is that the case on this campus? And I see Andrew Gates with his finger up. Why would somebody like Oscar immediately not want to like somebody like you?
Well, it's because, you know, people on both sides sort of, when they're in these echo chambers, they develop these preconceived notions of the opposite side. I will like to point out that if you looked at the UCSB College Republicans and you went to their meeting a year ago, or during the elections, you would find that literally one person out of a room of 35 supported Trump and his ideas, right? I feel that a lot of the extremism, we could speak about extremism on the left, but I would talk about like extremism on the right. I feel that a lot of the radicalism, a lot of the people who are, you know, getting into these, you know, so-called alt-right movements, it wasn't because they sat there and they analyzed, you know, some alt-right guy on 4chan's arguments, right? They weren't like, oh, you know, like I actually like genuinely believe in all this stuff about protectionism, about nationalism, about, you know, cultural identity. That's not what happened. In fact, like a lot of people did not believe in that. 90% of the college Republicans that I knew did not. What happened was, you know, you see radical leftists constantly suppressing free speech and constantly telling people that they are Nazis, that they are fascists, even when they are not. And it sort of made a victim out of the people who were actually, you know, alt-right or, you know, white nationalists. It made them a victim. And what that did was garner sympathy, not only from the conservatives, right? You had a lot of, like, blue states going towards, you know, Donald Trump, the, you know, I don't think he's a fascist, but if you think he's a fascist, you had a lot of historically blue states flipping to him. And, you know, a lot of it was like, you know, the constant attacks on him garnered him sympathy and portrayed him as a victim. So I don't think that this strategy is effective in, you know, stomping out fascism. It only contributes to the rise of it.
Samantha Sanchez, did you want to jump in here?
Yeah, I think that that's absolutely true. I don't think that allowing one side to garner sympathy for the other, it helps at all. I think that it does the exact opposite of what you're trying to do. But for me, I don't think it's necessarily about, I believe you said something about, what was it again? You said that it's about like attacking the other person and trying to make them seem like they're a fascist. I don't think that that's necessarily what it is. I think it's a lot of defense. and feeling like you have to stand up for yourself. I don't believe that anybody on the right or the left innately are evil people. That's just not something that I believe. But for me, I do think that there are a lot of people who don't, on either side, who don't think about the impact that they have, not necessarily their intent, but their impact. And I think when we look at that, there's a lot of things that we would and should be more careful about.
Oscar Zarate, you have said publicly you're undocumented, mm-hmm. and you were just talking about a few minutes ago a situation in which Border Patrol agents were on campus for a job fair, and there were... We heard of some complaints of some folks on the Republicans maybe speaking out loudly in that situation and maybe saying some things about undocumented students or and maybe we got to get them off campus or stuff like that. Yeah. How does that feel for you also? Because I know that you and Andrew Gates, the head of the College Republicans, are actually friends.
Yeah, we are friends. I feel like nowadays people just want to surround themselves with mirrors and not actual human beings. I feel like right now... We just want to be around people who reciprocate every idea that we have. And I feel that's not actual friendship. I feel like I enjoy the company of Andrew Gates because of his human, what he is instead of what he believes in. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, and I also like because like we just have wonderful political discourses that is...
So you can separate those, what he believes versus who he is or what kind of a person
he is. Yeah, because Andrew's not a bad guy. I just feel he believes in things that I... vehemently opposed, and I feel he's the person I need to be talking to strengthen my own positions and also have that dialogue that I feel is optimal for a democracy.
Andrew Gates, does that sound about right to you?
No, yeah, I love Oscar. Like one of the things that drew me to Oscar was like the fact that even though he has a lot of these progressive leftist ideals and views, he still fundamentally believes in free speech and having a dialogue. And I think that's literally the only common ground that two people of opposing political views need to have to be friends. It's the idea that like you can say what you want and I'm not gonna think you're evil. I'm not gonna think that you're attacking me personally. I'm only gonna think that you are irrational. As like harsh as that sounds, right. I don't believe that the conclusions you've reached are true.
Oscars are out
there. Not only irrational, but I feel like you need a partner in searching that truth of what the situation is. I mean, and I feel that's what Andrew kind of serves as, like that partner in that search for the truth of what is right in immigration, what is right in terms of structuring our society, and those kind of tough discussions that we need to have as a people.
Well, if you're just joining us on the radio right now, we are live at UC Santa Barbara at the Multicultural Center. We're discussing political polarization on college campuses after hearing about the number of right-wing speakers being thrown off campuses over the last year or two and hearing from four different students, Republicans, Democrats, all up here together tonight. Samantha Sanchez, to go to you here for a second, we were just hearing about Oscar Zarate and Andrew Gates forming this bond about who they are as people. Would you feel comfortable just opening up and having a dialogue with anybody, even if you thought they were on the far, far right?
Yeah. For me, it doesn't really take a lot to have a dialogue. I think it's one of two things. It's bringing students together like this, because we really don't ever have this opportunity to actually sit down and have conversations like these, first and foremost. Second of all, my only requirement for that conversation would be to be clear and concise and, again, mindful of the impact of your words. And I think that's a healthy way to have a dialogue.
Well, it's interesting that you said you've never had an opportunity to have this type of a conversation, a structured mm-hmm. conversation. And it makes me wonder about the role of the university in a place like this, because I've asked about a debate club. There is one, but it does not seem to be very active. Cole Martin, the California Republican over here and a student leader, is it true that there's not a space on a campus to have a conversation like this?
Yeah, there really isn't, and it's scary. It's scary. When you look at someone like the teachings of Socrates, he says an unexamined life is not worth living. And so when you can't examine your life, your ideas, your beliefs on a campus, is it worth being here? Is it worth challenging your own ideas? And this... what you'll find is a vast echo chamber on both sides. One is a little bit bigger than the other. One's a little bit smaller. But of course, we find ourselves in these echo chambers, and I don't think it's as easy to cross the aisle as sometimes people believe. if you go to someone on the other side and you sit down and have a conversation, I wholeheartedly believe that you will find commonalities. You'll find common ground. You'll enjoy the conversation. You'll enjoy what you're talking about. But the hard thing is crossing that line. And so when we can't do it personally, and the university doesn't aid us in those endeavors, it makes it extremely hard, and it only increases this polarization on campus that we have been seeing over the past few years increase.
Andrew Gates with the College Republicans. I mean, we do hear of these campuses as being overwhelmingly liberal, and I wonder what that's like for those students on the right. Do you feel uncomfortable being on campus? Do you feel that professors are trying to lead students down a liberal path? Do you feel scared to speak in class when you want to talk about maybe conservative ideals? What's that like for you?
I don't feel any fear on campus. I guess that's one of my privileges. I do see people who genuinely do feel this, like, you know, persecution, so to speak. Like, I do know people, you know, who have been literally, like, targeted at their jobs, people who have been, you know, who've lost all their friends, and, you know, they're not even as radical as, like, a guy like me, right? Like, a lot of these people are very, like, moderate, and I've seen, like, the stuff that's happened to them, and I can't help but, like, you know, like, to feel something for that.
Right.
So,
well, there was an interesting case when Trump, President Trump was elected. The UCSB faculty put on something called Day of Democratic Education, and it was a direct response to the election, and there were lectures about the environment, Islamophobia, and there was one, for example, called Trumpism, Racism, and Fascism. And I know some students may have interpreted that as professors speaking out, maybe on their liberal agenda. Cole Martin, do you think, how did that whole demonstration feel to you? Did you feel it was unfair, or that the professors had a right to do this?
It's difficult because you see an institution taking a complete side. Now, that was expected completely. I expected it being here at a UC campus, especially UCSB, as liberal as it is. But it really hurts more when the extreme liberal values are put into our lectures. Those are where the problems really rise. When I was in one of my econ lectures, the professor was talking about minimum wage and how that negatively affects job growth and job opportunity. But directly afterwards said, but we need it. We need minimum wage. And so it's one of those things where in lecture halls, it's even more difficult when there's 800 students sitting in a room and they take this as complete truth. They take this as theory. They take this as the absolute of what it is to get an education. And so I understood why the professors put it on, because most of the students would have been upset because they disagree with who got elected. But the real problem arises within lecture halls and when they're talking about theory, when they're talking about, believe this is really what we're supposed to be doing, and it has a liberal agenda behind it.
Well, and I wonder, too, if, and I could be very wrong on this, but when you feel pushed to the side, when you feel like there is that agenda, Andrew Gates is the head of the College Republicans. Do you feel that you need to shout even louder to get your voice out on campus? You need to make even bigger demonstrations to get a point across?
I mean, that's one tactic, yeah. And
do you think it's a tactic that's been used, or that you've had
to
use? Well,
yeah, obviously, you have to be provocative in some sense to, garner people attention, right? And like that, but the issue is that people think that is the sole reason we do this, right? If you looked at feminists in the 60s and 70s, or even in the 20s, a lot of them use provocative tactics because they're being told, you know, you have to wear this, you have to do this for the rest of your life. And they use provocative tactics in order to get attention, which, you know, drew people to their movement. That's not a bad thing, not inherently. It's when you're only being provocative for the sake of being provocative that it's a bad thing. And I will say that, you know, we were just talking about the Day of Democratic Education. I think that is a clear, stark example of how people don't really understand, you know, what the right is and what fascism means. Because I do remember that at Trumpism, Racism, and Fascism, I remember distinctly them calling Ben Shapiro and David Horowitz fascist Nazis. And from what I can recall, those two people are Jewish people. So it's like, at this, and Ben Shapiro was the biggest critic of the so-called alt-right and of nationalist tendencies. So, you know, these days of democratic education, these like, you know, and like the professors peddling leftist dogma as fact in the lecture halls is not, you know, some like counterbalanced, you know, like dialogue, right? I would have no problem if one of my professors was liberal or leftist and, you know, was like, you know, hey, this is what I believe, but you can write whatever you want on your paper and I'll grade it on the merits of your argument.
Well, let's stop right there. Cole Martin, I mean, do you ever worry about getting a bad grade if they find out you're a Republican?
Not directly, but it is a fear of mine. If I put in one of my essays that I believe something, if I believe something on this campus, if one of my essays I wrote how Ben Shapiro came to the campus and it was a beautiful thing, it was fostering dialogue, and the professor literally wrote on my paper, keep out school politics. And so it's one of those things where even if I bring it up, that's my opinion, that's part of the theory, that's part of the ideas that I talk about, that they can't be brought into the lecture hall, and yet the professors themselves completely do.
Samantha Sanchez, I'm going to let you respond to that.
Yeah, I don't want to deny that there are a majority liberal, well, I don't want to speak for professors, but there are a lot of liberal professors, right? I don't want to deny that because I do believe that that is true. I also think that there are a lot of conservative professors on campus who push their conservative views in class. For example, I have a class right now that under the name of diversity and justice, it's actually a professor who's pushing conservative views. And for me, speaking up in class and other students who are liberals who are speaking up in class, we have been silenced by this one professor. We have been told that, you know, certain things are theories or his fact is right and ours is incorrect. So on both ends, I think you see that there is this case of silencing on both ends. And I don't think that that can be denied.
I want to get back to how a campus could promote some type of cross-political dialogue. But one thing I really want to do up here is in the last 9 minutes is see really where you guys agree and where you don't on some issues. Because we've talked a lot about how sometimes the biggest voice in the room here gets all the attention and everybody associates with that person or not on the right or the left. So we're going to go around here. I'm going to ask some questions on a couple issues and you can say yes or no, I agree with it, or add a sentence to it if you want. So let's start with this. Do you, and again, lots of political positions up here, do you believe climate change exists? And if so, should we be doing anything about it? Oscar Zarate.
Yes, I definitely believe climate change is a thing and it's man-made. I feel our government needs to be proactive in limiting carbon emissions and helping our energy system move towards more renewables and using and being less dependent on coal and oil.
Samantha Sanchez.
What he said.
Okay, he's, you know, Cole Martin of the California Republican Party, which he will create someday.
One day. And I think that's kind of where I differ a little bit, and some of the younger Republicans might differ as well, is that climate change is a thing. It's not our biggest problem. There's bigger problems such as ISIS or what's going on in the Middle East or a number of issues. But I believe that at some point conservatives should believe that they should conserve what they have been given, what God has given us, this beautiful earth. And let's work towards renewable energy, and there's some merit in that. But there are bigger issues that we need to take care of first.
Andrew Gates of the College Republicans?
Yes, I do believe in man-made climate change. However, I don't think the solution is more government. If you look at governmental agencies that were meant to protect the environment, like the EPA, you've noticed that they are some of the biggest polluters out there. And when you, you know, so that's where we would differ. We both believe in, you know, the science behind man-made climate change. I think that the solution is the free market, not more government.
Okay. Should gay marriage be legal? Oscar Zarate.
Yeah.
Yes. Samantha Sanchez.
Well, it is, and it should be, and it will be.
Cole Martin.
I believe the government shouldn't care who you sleep with as long as they don't bark and they're of age.
Okay. And Andrew Green.
It's a state's decision. I fully believe in states' rights and the 10th Amendment.
Okay. Here's a question that's been very, it's been a big question on this campus. Should UC Santa Barbara divest from Israel? And I know there's been a lot of writing about this here, and I believe the chancellor recently said he would take steps to potentially divesting. So, Oscar Zarate.
Want to start with Andrew on that one first?
Sure. Andrew Gates of the College Republicans. Should UC divest of Israel? Silence.
As divestment currently is laid out, no, because what divestment is just like an irrational, you know, misguided view of like the economics behind the university and investments. And it's very inconsistent with like, you know, views on like our economic actions with countries that are way more oppressive than Israel. And I do not support Students for Justice in Palestine or their like apartheid wall, which was riddled with falsities and blatant lies. But at the same time, I'm not a traditional Republican in the sense that I bow down to Israel and like want whatever they want. So,
Cole Martin with Associated Students, should UC divest from Israel?
So this is a topic we actually had come up for us. It turned into a meeting that went from 6 p.m. to about 5 a.m. Quite a long meeting. What it ended up coming to is that the UC actually doesn't have a lot of investments in Israel as it stands, just General Electric right now. And so it's a non-issue in my book.
Samantha Sanchez.
I abstain.
You abstain. Okay. Well, we'll let you off the hook on this one. How about marijuana? Should marijuana be legal?
Definitely.
Oscar Zarate, definitely.
Definitely.
Samantha Sanchez?
I don't smoke, but if that's your thing, go ahead.
Okay.
It doesn't affect me.
Okay. Cole Martin?
No, I don't think it should be legal.
No. Andrew Martin?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. It should be legal.
It should be legal.
Oh.
Common ground right there.
Oh, there's okay. We're finding this common ground here slowly. Okay. Do you think that the UC Santa Barbara administration should spend more money and resources on issues of sexual assault?
Yes.
Yes.
Definitely.
Samantha Sanchez.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I don't think we spend enough time or money on it.
Cole Marty?
Yes. I think the most important thing is fostering a dialogue of sexual assault, something that a lot of different communities on this campus have been trying to tackle. And I think we're moving in an extremely good direction right now.
I'm in full support of preventative measures to prevent sexual assault and views that foster, ideas of sexual assault. However, I do believe that the way universities have handled it has been a complete and total mess. And it's not only been a discussion on sexual assault, which we can all agree is abhorrent and one of the most, terrible crimes that you can do to any person. What the problem is, it's a lot of these policies are direct attacks on due process. And I believe that one of the fundamental key things that makes our American government distinct and exceptional is our support of due process.
Well, I'm going to finish it with this last question, because this is, in a way, while we're here, and we've discussed a lot of things along the way, but there is some common ground here, which is what we're finding on some levels. And do you believe that your generation, I know you have to speak for a lot of people here, I mean, when you see the fighting and the bickering going on in Washington right now, do you feel that within your generation, your friends, your not friends here on these UC campuses, that you'll be able to move the political conversation forward in some type of a productive way over the next 20 years? Or do you think we're going to see the exact same thing we're seeing right now? Oscar Zarate.
I mean, I feel that the polarization that I've seen in my own groups and in groups that differ in ideology from me and the people I associate with is something that is not allowing for good campus climate. I definitely took that what Cole said about stepping over that line. It is very difficult. But I think the moment I did it with the College Republicans and interacting with Andrew, I never regretted it. It's helped me bolster my ideology. It's helped me make better arguments. And I feel that for some reason we've forgotten the merit of just sitting down and having a dialogue with somebody. And I feel that hopefully in the coming years we can find that benefit that it comes from engaging with someone in true and honest discussion.
Samantha Sanchez, what do you think? Is there hope for this generation politically to get along?
I have hope in the sense that I believe at some point, for myself, it's already happened, but at some point for everyone, there will be a moment where we can take a step back and say, like, all we need is respect for lives. That's really it. We just have to be able to respect one another and respect each other's lives. And I think in that, you can foster a dialogue that is healthy, like I've said earlier, and be able to have a conversation to move things forward. I think without that respect, then the conversation cannot move forward. So with that, yes, I do have hope. How long it will take, who knows? If it will be this generation, who knows? But I think there are quite a few people who are realizing and recognizing that we all have a lot more in common than we think.
All right, Cole Martin.
Yeah, I mean, to quote Paul Ryan, this is the battle of ideas. This is something that's been going on for a long, long time. If you look at history, on the Hill, there was two members of Congress that ended up getting in a fight and shot each other. I mean, this has been going on for a long time. And so I don't believe it's going to stop. I believe there's going to continuously be polarization in this country. But that's healthy. That's a part of a healthy democracy. We want two sides. We want differing opinions so that we come up with the ultimate best solution.
And finally, Andrew Gates.
No, I do not have hope in this generation. And sorry to be a boomer. No offense. But I fundamentally believe that the polarization has gotten so bad. I don't think anywhere in history, except for maybe the Civil War, and even then, like, the North and the South, like, still, like, respected each other and always sang about, like, how, you know, how much they loved their fellow American. But, like, I don't believe that, like, polarization has reached the peak that it has reached. And I do believe, you know, for lack of a better analogy, that what we're seeing right now in today's American political climate is a sort of microcosm of what we saw in Weimar Germany, in the Weimar Republic, wherein you have the radical left and the radical far right sort of fighting for the, you know, the populist support. And I don't believe it's going to get better. I hope and I like, you know, pray that it does get better, right? What I believe is going to happen is not what I believe, what I want to happen, right? Right.
Well, thanks to all of you four panelists up here, Cole Martin, Oscar Zarate, Samantha Sanchez, Andrew Gates, a hand for our panelists. I know it's not easy to talk about a lot of this. Thank you also to our hosts here, the Multicultural Center at UC Santa Barbara, and our co-sponsor, the Lois and Walter Capp Center for Creative Democracy. And of course, thank you to our audience, both here in the theater and listening to the broadcast. This conversation was produced by Catherine Barnes. Tonight's live event was produced by Chrissy Simon. Our technical director is Phil Richards, backed by KCRW's chief engineer, Steve Herbert, and engineers David Green and Duncan Brode. You are listening to member-supported KCRW on air at 88.7 KDRW Santa Barbara and 89.1 KCRU Oxnard. We are Music Culture News, a community service of Santa Monica College and NPR for Southern California. Coming up for our radio listeners, music. That'll be a good change for our Wednesday night. From our Wednesday night DJ, Garth Trinidad, I'm Jonathan Bastian. Thanks for listening and good night.